5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, lift off and the clock has started. Yes, sir, reading you loud and clear.
Ask a rocket scientist.
Oxygen, go. All systems are go.
Welcome to a very special edition of Ask a Rocket Scientist. This is the Ad Astra version, the new Brad Pitt movie that just came out. So Bill and I and my two sons, Eddie and Oliver.
Hi.
Hello.
Went to go see it a couple days ago, and we're going to break it down. Normally here on the show, it's always fun to talk to Bill about the scientific reality of movies, like how scientifically accurate they are. And we're going to kind of do that, but I want to do it also through the eyes and ears of my children. So Bill, first say hi.
Hello, Chuck.
All right, proof that Bill is here with us. All right, so Eddie and Oliver, I want you guys to summarize the movie. Now, we're going to do this as best we can with no spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, this should be a safe podcast. We're going to get into some things, but we're going to try not to spoil anything. So with that in mind, Eddie, Oliver, if you would like to tell us what this movie was about.
All right, Oliver, you go first.
Thanks, Eddie. So there's this dude. He finds out that his dad's still alive.
What's his name?
Gets on a ship, and then...
His name is Roy.
Colonel Roy? Major Roy. Major? Colonel?
Major.
Major Roy. All right, we'll call him Major Roy. That's Brad Pitt's character. This is going great so far.
Gets on a rocket. Goes to the moon. It's pretty great. Gets on another rocket at the moon. Goes to Mars. Also pretty great. Tries to contact his dad. Does it successfully. And then... Gets on a rocket on Mars, and he goes to where his dad is.
Which is where?
Nebula.
It's Neptune. He goes to Neptune.
There we go.
Thank you.
And so basically he goes to Neptune because there's these big energy surges that are affecting Earth. It's pretty great.
And why are they going to Neptune? These energy surges, who's responsible for the energy surges?
All right, so...
His dad.
Okay.
Oliver,
his dad.
By the way, the beautiful thing here that you can't see, I might take a picture, is the fact that we've only got one microphone. So not only are these brothers who are always battling each other, they're also battling each other for the microphone.
Oliver, get your head away from mine.
Should we throw in the side question on what mnemonic were you guys taught in school to remember the order of the planets? So when I grew up, it was my very educated mother just surface 9 pizza pies.
We just learned the names of the planets.
Yeah, well,
there was totally. No like specific like nursery rhyme or anything. There was just like
very educated brother just surfaced 9 pizza pies.
And so
I didn't even learn the planets.
Oh, truth in advertising.
Well, keep in mind during Oliver's lifetime they've changed.
That's true. Poor little Pluto got demoted.
Pluto was a planet when you were born, but now, 15 years later, it is not a planet.
Now we're looking for number 10 out there.
All right, so Ed,
back into the movie.
Yeah, elaborate a little bit more. Give us a little bit more detail. But again, try not to spoil. You did a great summary.
I did pretty good.
That's a really good summary, but Eddie, give us a little bit more flavor.
Okay.
So,
what can you add to this, to what Oliver's already given
us? So the reason why he goes to the moon... There are pirates on the moon.
Not Pittsburgh Pirates.
Not Pittsburgh Pirates.
Not Brad Pittsburgh Pirates.
Okay. Wait, can we stop just for a minute? Bill throwing in Brad Pittsburgh Pirates. Come on, that's a pretty good joke.
That's pretty great.
We're going to take a minute for that one. All right, go ahead. No, you can
you're
share.
You're an idiot. You are an idiot. He does not go to the moon.
Hey, you share the microphone.
Yeah.
If you both have something to say.
Share. He does not go to the moon. Because there are pirates. He goes to the moon and look.
I was just saying that there were pirates on the moon. And that's not the reason why I went to the...
Don't spill your drink.
And learns that there are pirates. He doesn't go there specifically because there are pirates. He goes to the moon to get onto a rocket to go to Mars.
That's not what I said.
Okay, all right. So we've established that there are pirates. So why are there pirates on the moon?
Okay, so Oliver, shut up.
Let Eddie give a shot at this.
Okay, so... So this is placed obviously way far in the future. And
go ahead.
And so there is an actual civilization on the moon. It's been there long enough for people to have had children on the moon.
Also on Mars.
Yeah, and on Mars. So that happens. And so he goes to the moon, figures out they're pirates, and then there's this really cool moon chase scene. And then to get to the place where there's the rocket to get to Mars, he goes to Mars, and then he tries to make contact with his dad, and then we think he does, and then he is like...
Oliver, go ahead.
Crap. No. What do you mean... We think he makes contact. He definitely makes contact with his dad, you moron.
Okay,
I think the movie leaves that to a little bit of conjecture.
No, okay. You can tell.
I'm going to interrupt
you
here.
Can tell.
I'm going to interrupt here just for a quick second to clarify this nightmarish recap of the movie. So it starts off, Brad Pitt is an astronaut, and this movie takes place in the future when travel into space is much more commonplace. In fact, Virgin Atlantic takes regular humans like you and I up, as well as astronauts, serves as a shuttle service to get us to the moon. There's a base on the moon, and then there's also a base on Mars. And so Brad Pitt was pulled aside. His father, 30 years earlier, was sent out to Neptune for this thing called the LIMA Project. His father's was supposed to try to contact, see if there's extraterrestrial life. And for some reason, needed to go all the way out to Neptune to do this research. We'll talk about that here in a moment. So apparently something crazy is going on out in Neptune where there's this beam of energy and stuff coming back towards Earth, which has the potential to eliminate all life in the solar system. Again, we'll get into that as well. So Brad Pitt needs to reach out and see if his father is still alive. The scientists believe that his father is still alive. So Brad Pitt needs to reach out, see if he's there, and talk him off the ledge. Try and talk some sense into him so that they can stop this project. So, in essence, that's Ad Astra. Is that close? We good? Okay.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'd buy that for a dollar. Okay, so first question. So why, Bill, would the LIMA project have to happen so far away from the sun? Whatever the rationale is in the movie, or if there's grounded in science, why can't we just really look for extraterrestrial life and focus our energy here? And why would he need to be? Why would the project need to be right. so far away from?
Right. It doesn't need to be that far away. That's a bit of Hollywood making this more dramatic. If you want to ground this in Earth-based science, the James Webb Space Telescope, which is supposed to fly, coming up soon. That's mission is the same. They're going to deploy it onto space at a Lagrange point, which is a point that's stationary in space relative to, in this case, it's a Sun-Earth Lagrange point. So it's always going to be fixed in the same place relative to the Sun and the Earth.
So we've got...
facing outward.
We have a telescope.
With a big shield behind it to keep the Sun's light from ever blocking its view or hindering its view. So you don't have to go to Neptune. We're building one right now that's kind of trying to do the same thing. But it's going to be, in physical space, is a lot closer to us than Neptune.
Got it. So we're working on something like this right now.
Yes.
Like an actual far-ranging telescope that doesn't need to go as far as Neptune.
No.
Okay. It's going to get, but it will be stationed between the Earth and the Moon, you said? A Lagrange point?
No, it's a Lagrange point. So that's a point in space. In one of our previous episodes, we talked about the Earth-Moon Lagrange points, where if you park a spaceship there, it's always in the same place relative to the two bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same type of Lagrange points exist for the Sun and the Earth, and there's many of these systems. And so I believe James Webb Space Telescope goes to a Sun-Earth Lagrange point is where we're going to park it.
Okay, so in this movie, at Astra, they're sending them out to Neptune just because it's awesome.
It
needs to be much further. There needs to be a much longer journey. There needs to be more heightened intensity.
Right. And the movie doesn't really justify it beyond they needed to get outside the influence of the Earth and the Sun.
Got it. Okay, so the boys were talking about this earlier. I want them to kind of talk about this a little bit. When Brad Pitt's character goes to the moon, he's told that many different nations have established points on the moon, and now there are pirates, which are driving around, stealing stuff. It's turned into kind of like a no man's land. Like there's a very secure area, a base where... Brad Pitt's ship lands, but then just outside the skirts of that, just on the outskirts of that, it's kind of madness. It's like the high seas on the planet Earth, where it's anarchy out there. So, Oliver or Eddie, talk about the car chase.
Okay, so in the car chase scene,
the rover chase.
Yeah. So there's Brad Pitt with his crew of people.
Yeah, so the storyline is there's a base where everybody lands, and then to take a ship to Mars, you have to launch from a different site. So to get to that site, you have to take a rover from the secure area across no man's land to a different area to launch to Mars. And so they have to cross over into the dark side of the moon to this other launch point. Go ahead, Eddie.
So that's actually what they call it in the movie, the no man's land. So Roy, Brad mm-hmm. Pitt's character, is on the rover with his crew of people. And then there's another rover right behind him with a crew of people. And so they're just minding their business, zooming along. And then they're going up over some hills. And when they're at the peak of a hill, they see two other cars or rovers going over here. And so they figure out that they're pirates. And so they come along to try to hijack the rovers and kill everybody on the one that's behind Roy's. And so then Roy on his is trying to shoot the pirates with this laser gun, which is really cool. And so that happens. He kills the pirates, and then he gets to the place.
So in this situation, so in essence, what you've got is a car chase on the moon with rovers. These pirates are attempting to shoot, kill, steal everything that Brad Pitt's caravan has. And so, yeah, so...
Well, let me premise you with my three questions. One, why are they fighting over the moon?
Why are they fighting
over the moon? Why are the pirates fighting over the moon? What are they fighting over?
Okay.
Two, how's that gun work? And right. Three, why did they need to go to the other side of the moon to launch the other rocket?
Uh-huh. These are all questions I've got for you, brother.
All right. I've got those ones ready.
I have a question.
Yes.
How can the moon never be facing Earth?
Part of the moon?
Yeah, that's of the moon is always facing Earth.
Correct.
So. That is a very good question.
And it's not the dark side of the moon, because it actually gets light over there. It's the far side of the moon. It's like a tetherball. The same side of the moon is always facing Earth. And that evolves from one of the theories is that it's actually when the Earth was forming, it's a part of the material that formed the Earth broke off. And that's why it's in sync, the way it spins such that it always faces, the same side always faces Earth as it moves around. Much like a tetherball.
Right. Okay, I've got a couple questions about a car chase on the moon. How fast can you drive on the moon?
Ooh, excellent question.
Because
if your gravity is 1/6 of Earth, roughly,
mm-hmm.
If you ever hit a jump, like in the form of a ramp, it gives you enough vertical speed to get you airborne and you're not coming back down. I mean, that could be a problem. I think that might be your limiting factor.
Yeah, because we saw
this happens in the movie. At the end of the car chase, Roy has to take over the rover, and then for some reason it goes off a cliff and
it launches into a crater. Yeah, they get run off into a crater, and they have to go flying, spinning. Did you have something you want to bring in to this?
They go into the crater, and then they spin around in like a circle, in like a spiral, and then they stop at the bottom and then drive up to the rocket.
Yeah, somehow they're able to survive this.
Survive what looks like a 100-foot fall.
Yes, easily, of course.
Easily, yeah.
And then continue to drift around the entire crater.
Right. The rover's still functional at this point, by the way.
Of course it is. Yeah, because again, Hollywood. So how can you orchestrate a car chase gunfight on the moon? Like, is this possible? I'm assuming it's not possible today. Like, if we had enough moon rovers up there, typical firearms wouldn't work. Like, pistols, machine guns, or would they?
They would need an oxidizer, because gunpowder right now needs oxygen, right? If you had if you had some sort of oxidizer in the bullet,
okay,
they would still create a reaction firing out of a cylinder. So I actually read what they intended that gun to be in the movie. It's a molten metal slug.
Mm-hmm.
It's not meant to be like a laser, like Star Wars kind of gun. It was intended to be firing a molten metal slug. So you have some sort of oxidizer and a slug of metal.
Okay.
And some sort of combustion that launches this out. And in the movie, you see kind of a red glow behind it. If it's molten metal, I mean, entirely plausible. If that's the premise, I'll give them credit. They actually did try to make that one follow some sort of, I guess, basic rules of physics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the rovers whooping around like they do, I think it's like most space movies where everything moves about 10 times faster than you probably could or should.
Got it. Because all the footage that I've seen from, the Apollo program, the rovers are kind of chugging along. Yeah. It's like, it seems like these are much more aggressively engined.
Yeah. Somehow they got V8s on these rovers.
Because they are hauling butt across the lunar surface. Yeah,
I personally be a little nervous about that being, kind of cavalier, because spacesuits gets punctured. And we see this several times in the movie where spacesuits start leaking. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're whipping around on a rover and rover's flipping up rocks at you, I'm not sure that's quite the place to be.
Yeah. Well, it seems like punctures would happen a lot more often.
Yeah.
Because you're kicking up so much debris. Okay, you mentioned earlier that you may have a reason why they had to launch from Mars from a different location.
Right.
From their landing point.
Right. So the way the movie loosely shows this is when they're landing, they're on the near side of the moon. Well, if you're going to launch a rocket and it comes off the near side of the moon, it's going to be pointed right back at Earth. That doesn't do you much good. So you have to get somewhere else on the moon. Now, you wouldn't want to be on the far opposite side either. It's not the worst place to be, but if you were on the side of the moon that is the forward side of the moon, right mm-hmm. on the Terminator between light and dark, or far and near, then you're picking up the extra speed of the moon, helping you get off the moon as well. So ideally, I don't think you'd want to be all the way on the far side the way they premise it in the movie, but at least they're shooting off the backside where it makes more sense. Like, you're not going to aim right back at Earth. You're aiming into outward space.
Because the moon doesn't really rotate to our eyes, there is a constant near side of the moon, which we see, and then the far side of the moon, which we never see here on the planet because of the way that it rotates and whatnot.
Right.
So what you're saying is launching from the dark side, the far side of the mm-hmm. moon, you've got a better trajectory towards Mars. Right.
You have an outward facing trajectory. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. See, this is making sense now.
Yeah. Now the whole what are they fighting over and why are there pirates on the moon mm-hmm. might be a little bit more compelling question.
What do you think the answer is, Oliver? What do you think that they are fighting over? Use your imagination. What do you think's going on up there?
Well, I would imagine that people need valuable stuff to make the rockets go whoosh.
Yeah.
And
technical term.
So uh-huh. they might want to steal that and then go back to Earth and be like, here, we got some rocket fuel. You can use this.
So do you think that there's valuable resources on the moon? Do you think?
I don't know. I don't study the moon.
Okay. Well, that's why Bill's here. Eddie?
So I'm guessing...
What's your thought?
That like Oliver said, the pirates are trying to get like rocket fuel to be able to take it back to Earth to have some whoosh feel. Fuel. The words. And... I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind.
All right, perfect.
That was such an intelligent conversation, Eddie.
You were part of that conversation as well.
Ooh.
Great
ooh,
line of words you touché. Just did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is 24 hours a day in this house, Bill. This is what's going on.
I know, it's full contact. I have brothers.
Yeah. So, it never changes. What do you think they're fighting over?
So I have my theory based on what we know right now, what's on the moon, which would be something like helium-3, which we can't get on Earth, but it is on the moon.
Okay.
As a fusion fuel, potential fusion fuel. The movie uses antimatter, which is another common thread in a lot of science fiction. It's like, well, maybe the moon has some sort of resource that they're using to, I don't know if you really manufacture antimatter. It's already, you know, the theory is when the universe formed, it was there naturally, but it didn't, nobody really knows why matter won out over antimatter. But maybe they find something on the moon that enables it, and they're fighting over that.
All right. There needs to be a much longer conversation between you and I about matter and antimatter.
Yeah.
It is. I still have an impossible time wrapping my head around it. All right. Eddie wants to interject here. Then
okay.
I go to the
so
question.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Oh, great.
And
he's back.
So I think that a lot of the main countries in the world have figured out how to get to the moon and how to make rockets. And so they figured out how to get to the moon. They've colonized it. For like they've colonized parts of it for themselves, and now they want the fuel from the moon or from other, like America, like America's section of the moon. They want the fuel from that place to bring back to Earth to give to their country to use for more rocket fuel to make more money from like rocket tickets and stuff like that.
That's an interesting observation. Yeah. Because if you think about it, so if let's say that the moon is rich.
Like it's so far in the future that.
Right.
That well, they do say in the movie that it's not that far in the future, though. It kind of opens up with a Star Wars-esque beginning where there's words on the screen. Yeah. It says, and then, you know, not very distant.
Yeah,
future.
In the not too distant future.
In the near future.
The near future. Oliver was paying
so,
attention.
Okay, like, so if we're talking rocket fuel, but what kind of rocket fuel are they looking for? How long did it take them to get from Mars to Neptune?
I don't know, rockets.
Just thinking. Just saying out loud here.
Eddie just epitomized the entire reason for this podcast. I don't know, rockets. That's why I have Bill sit with me as often as possible, because Eddie, I don't know rockets either.
I think the kind of rocket fuel they're looking for is the kind that makes it go swoosh.
Oliver, knocking it out of the park. So it's no longer swoosh. Now swoosh.
That's super fast.
Is much faster by a variable of 10.
Because it's got momentum added to it.
It's got added momentum. All right, but then, because what I was going to say earlier is, so let's say that the moon has certain minerals and stuff that are very rare that we don't have on Earth. So the first people that get to the moon get to go search and find that stuff. And if they find, like, hey, there's this really rich section of this mineral, we're going to claim this as ours. Let's say it's the United States. All right, the U.S. claims this part of the moon. And then the second, let's say China gets up there next, China's like, we want this part, which has also got a lot of minerals, not as many as the first. And then by the time you get to India, and who else might get up there?
Spacefaring nations, yeah. Russia, India. You got the big four right there, Japan. Okay.
Yeah, so let's say Japan comes up in their fifth. We're like, well, heck, we don't get as much of the mineral-rich areas, so maybe Japan settles this one area, and they're like, all right, well, if we just sneak over to India's, we can steal some of theirs, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we're going to steal from the... Because that could be how it eventually devolved into...
Right. Depending on what we find up there, because to your point, it's like it's either minerals we already know on Earth. Mm-hmm. Helium-3 is not something we don't know on Earth. It just doesn't make it through the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So we don't get that form of helium here. But let's say we find a whole new mineral on the moon.
What would helium-3 do? Like what is so special about helium-3?
Okay, so helium-3. So normally when we have helium on Earth, it's a single molecule. In space...
Super good for filling up balloons.
Excellent, yeah. And squeaky voices. Fantastic job. Helium-3 out in free space, it's three of these molecules that are bound together. They don't want to survive in that form on Earth.
So would helium-3 be three molecules of helium?
Yes. Okay. Naturally stable as three.
That makes sense.
So think H2O2, which is water, or H2O, not H2O2, H2O, it's two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen, and that's water. So helium-3 is just, got the little three next to it. It's stable in that form. So the thinking is, right now with nuclear reactions on Earth, we take an element that's very high on the periodic table, we have a reaction, and it starts degrading downward. Well, the opposite side of that could be start with something that's really low on the periodic table, like helium, and then through fusion, you're not starting with a nasty element to start with, it's just decaying into another nasty element. You're starting with helium, breaking that apart, or it could be fusion, which where you're putting them together. You're not creating any detrimental product from it. It's helium. It's already at the bottom of the periodic table.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is H3 is superhelium.
Or HE3.
HE3.
H is hydrogen.
So like...
HE3 is superhelium.
Yes. So the helium-3, like, is it more powerful? Like...
You can do different things with it.
You can do something with it that's different than what we have at our disposal on Earth right now. Like our nuclear reactions are typically fission, where you're breaking atoms apart. But if you can fuse them together, we think that's the future of nuclear. We're still striving to get our first sustained fusion reaction, but you would need a different type of fuel. And helium-3 is proposed as one of the more ideal fuels that we could use.
Okay.
All right. Any questions, cool. Oliver?
No.
Short, sweet, and to the point.
What kind of impact would the lack of no gravity have on his dad's mental health and, just overall physical health? Like, would he just get crushed into a Coke can?
You mean if he came back to Earth?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Yeah, so lack of gravity. Yeah.
So, again, to recap, Brad Pitt's dad, played by Tommy Lee Jones, has been in the orbit of Neptune for 30 years. And so, obviously, I don't think the gravitational pull is similar to what it would be here on Earth. And I don't know if his capsule has artificial gravity or if he's just been floating for 30 years, because it seems like he would just turn into one of those big gelatinous people from the movie Up.
Yep.
Or from the movie Wall-E.
Wall-E.
Yeah, from Wall-E. Yes.
But that's because they didn't exercise in Wall-E. They were just sitting around having robots do everything for them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because of the lack of gravity.
Well, I think lack of gravity helped, but I think you're right. The sedentary life. So,
yeah.
So talk about that. Being in a gravity deficient environment for 30 years.
I don't even know if he would be functional, to be honest.
Would he be functional on the ship in that environment? Would he still be able to?
Potentially, yeah. Okay. So if you take our experience with astronauts in low Earth orbit here on Earth on the space station, immediately they start decalcifying their bones because you don't need bones when you're in space. You can be a blob and function just fine. So your bones start decalcifying, your organs start processing differently. You get more fluid. One thing has been noted is that the astronaut's vision changes because the fluid in your body is no longer being held down. So there's more fluid, say, in your head, which pushes on your ocular nerves. And so a lot of things start changing. They start changing very quickly upon a zero G environment.
Also, another thing that I want to toss this in for the boys that Bill and I have talked about in the past, when you are in zero gravity, when you're on the International Space Station, you don't know when you have to pee.
Yes.
Because here on Earth, gravity is pulling the liquid in our body down into our bladder. And once it gets super full, we're like, hello. But up there, all the liquid's just kind of floating around. So you don't know.
You don't. Because all the nerves in your bladder are on the bottom side. And so that's the problem in space. Astronauts have a very strict schedule every 2 hours that they have to go try to go to the bathroom because they will never know. And the problem in space is by the time you do know is when the liquid is forced completely across both sides of your bladder, which means it's absolutely full.
Yeah.
At which point you have to catheterize. There's no other way around that one.
So this is just some of the fun that Tommy Lee Jones has to go through.
I don't know. Well, okay. Many questions come to mind because he's been there 30 years. He's been exposed to space radiation. I don't know how he didn't die of cancer 12 times over.
Right.
You know, unless somehow in this near future we have figured out how to properly shield spacecraft. Where did the water come from? You can recycle water. Space station is 100% recycled. I mean, you're reusing everything you can, but they still have to add water, you know, on supply ships. Mm. Right. So where did you get 30 years of water? You know, I don't think they never mentioned that. Like, they have some sort of mining operation on Neptune to go get ice.
Right. Well, there is. You
know, there's some vague holes there.
There is a plot point that happens not just to Tommy Lee Jones's character, but also to Brad Pitt's character, in that the ships were initially designed to keep many astronauts alive. And it turns out that there really only one astronaut in each craft. So there is a greater supply of food and water on board. Now, granted, 30 years worth, I don't know if he's going to turn into Matt Damon from The Martian and start doing some, you know, some poop potatoes or something. Yeah. However, he's going to have to survive recycling all the water. But So 30 years weightless.
Yeah.
Other than nutritionally.
Yeah.
Like psychologically.
Psychologically. Well, especially to Tommy Lee Jones' character. He's locked up in a tin can for 30 years. Dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would take a toll on anybody.
Right.
You know, because he stops, as purported by the movie, there's no communication. So Tommy Lee Jones is sitting down there by himself in a tin can for an awful lifetime.
He literally is like stranded. In essence, he's stranded on a desert island. No papers and bottles to toss into the ocean to hopefully find some person to chat with. He's there.
Yeah.
For 30 years, in essence.
So like Oliver asked, what would happen to Clifford, which is Roy's dad's name, what would happen to him if he were to go somewhere with gravity? Like, what would happen to his
skeletal
structure?
Yeah. Well, let's even just introduce him gently to, like, the moon.
Yeah.
You know, or Mars. Moon is something with
less gravitational pull, sure.
Yeah. I personally think he'd be dead if he came back to Earth. We've had some long-duration astronauts that come back to Earth, and they had a great difficulty transitioning back to a gravity environment. And they were, you know, we're only talking 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I read an article once about a Russian cosmonaut who'd been up for an extended period of time. And a lot of things you take for granted just stop working. Like, okay, you're muscular. You don't need much muscle in space. You don't need bones.
Right.
So all that had degraded over time.
What was the one thing that was happening to Brad Pitt's character, Oliver? Talk about that, like his muscle stimulation. Remember that?
He had to get electrocuted.
So
they're using electrodes.
He would put patches onto like his biceps and triceps and just overall arm where the muscles were, and he would like press a button or whatever and it would stimulate the muscles to keep them to their normal physical form.
Yeah, try to keep them from atrophying.
Yeah, because he was also weightless. There were, and he spent, in essence, the journey from Mars to Neptune. They say it was 74 days.
I think 72 like days, which means we have some new form of propulsion.
There's got to be, because you and I have talked about how long that trip would take with our current propulsion.
It would take, like,
years.
The amount of time that Clifford was up there. It would take, like, 25, 30 years to get there.
How long would it take to get to Neptune?
Good question. Well, okay.
If the ship, the technology was there, we had the radiation shielding, we had everything, we were just launching. Let's say we were launching from the moon or outside of the Earth's gravitational pull where it's less gravity, and we were able to get a good burst. What was it, Oliver? Was it Foosh or Swoosh? What was it?
Well, now it is Boosh.
Now, okay.
We've evolved.
No. We are only at Boosh.
Okay.
Eventually, we'll get to Foosh, and then Swoosh is the big. That's okay. Now, we're just stuck at Boosh.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got a little Boosh.
If we had to use today's technology, we could not get there on chemical rockets. We'd have to do, if you think about New Horizons, which was the probe we launched in 2008 to go out to Pluto, fastest object we ever launched, and we put one of the smallest satellites ever built on one of the biggest rockets ever launched, and we just slungshot it out.
Yeah.
And it went through several gravity swings. I think it was eight and a half years to get to Pluto. Now, that is extraordinarily fast. Now, Neptune's one planet further in.
Sure.
But we could never achieve that kind of speed with a much heavier manned vehicle.
Got it.
It'd be significantly slower. So you're looking at 8.5 years. Okay, let's cut off a couple of years to go back up to Neptune. I don't know how long it took to go from one to the other. It probably wasn't 2 years, but let's say about a year of time.
Sure.
And then, you know, quadruple.
So if we were to launch
times that, I mean,
from the moon right now, with any technology that we've got, you're saying at the best 7 years, 7 years to get a craft from here, even if it's just a small satellite.
Yeah, that was, New Horizons, yeah.
Yeah, so 7 years. So somehow we've trimmed that down by, trimmed it.
Extraordinarily.
Yeah.
So we've gone 70
days instead of 7 years.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So the movie, in the kind of portray this is like, okay, there's like some sort of nuclear propulsion they have. They don't make it look like there's a mix of chemical rockets and some other kind of rocket in the movie. So they're alluding to some other technology. So it's probably some sort of nuclear engine.
Got it. So the answer to the gravitational question is
back to Earth, bad juju.
If Clifford were to come back to Earth, he would probably just squish.
Organs would not be able to function in gravity. And that's, we've seen the beginning phase.
His body would just shut down.
Astronauts and cosmonauts. Yeah. It's not something you can just switch back on.
Got it.
They would have to bring him back through sequential
increases
in gravity. So the moon is 1/6, and Mars is 1/3.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no in between Mars and here that I know of. So that's an awfully big step going from 1/3 gravity to full gravity.
And it would take months for your body to, it's kind of like climbing Everest. You get to a certain altitude, you have to stop and then go back down, let your body acclimate, then go a little bit higher up, come back down. You can only go up incrementally. You can't just one day, I'm going to Everest, and then climb all the way to the top.
Right.
Straight up.
I mean, I don't know if Tommy Lee Jones's character, Clifford, would have had, I mean, I don't know if bones would even be in his body anymore. It'd be kind of like, to go back to Wall-E, I mean, your body really doesn't need bones anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, we have spent a good amount of time on this movie. I want my kids to give it a quick little review. Let me know what you thought, if you'd recommend it. Like, kind of give it a thumbs up, thumbs down. Eddie, go ahead and you go first. Let us know. Like, tell us if you liked it, what you liked, and then is it good? Should people see it?
Okay, so I loved the movie. The movie was ridiculously entertaining. The trailers basically said it all. The deep voice guy said that Brad Pitt had an amazing performance, which he did. Mm-hmm. It was really great.
It was pretty good.
And so one thing that I didn't really like in the movie was that it's almost impossible to get through that movie without having an existential crisis. Like,
interesting.
There are scenes where you just
have
to look out into space and it's scary.
I don't. Okay, cool. So my review is,
we're just going to leave the existential crisis kind of just hovering there. The deep psychological scarring that happened in my son, Eddie. He's going to be wrestling with these issues for the rest of his life. But Oliver, okay, what did you think?
Brad Pitt was stupidly good. And so was the actor who plays dad.
Tommy Lee Jones is his name.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
He was also really good.
You're going to see him eventually. He was in an old Batman movie, and he actually played Two-Face. Mm-hmm. So this is a long time ago, but you may get to see him again. And he was in several other amazing movies that you'll see. But anyway, go ahead.
And yeah, it was just an overall pretty good movie. Really liked the storyline. Not a whole lot of plot holes except for everything we just talked about. And then, yeah, certified fresh, pretty good. I'd go see it.
You did? Nice. Yeah. Good. Would you? So if you, well, Oliver's got some really good buddies, would you take your buddies to go see it?
Oh, yeah. They all love space and, like, rockets. It's pretty cool.
Okay, good.
I suggest you see it.
And high-speed moon buggy chases.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, good. Bill, what do you think? So moon Bill's chases. The guy that I turn to, obviously, to talk about the scientific accuracy of movies like this. Can you set aside scientific inaccuracies to give the movie a recommendation? Are there scientific inaccuracies? Do you think it's pretty well grounded in science?
I think they tried to portray more realistically than many space movies. I say that the lapses in physics are probably just as large. They just made them less apparent.
Okay.
The way they portrayed them. And that's the thing. You do have to still have some willful suspension of disbelief and on most space movies, because in order to make a space movie, they have to. You know, they can't make an astronaut move at, you know, the speed of a snail and takes 6 hours to go, you know,
right,
100 yards.
Yeah.
You never sit through the movie.
Right.
So they do speed things up a wee bit. But otherwise, it's well done. It's well portrayed. It's more of a thinker than I was expecting. It strikes me as more like, you know, there's some elements of like 2001 Space Odyssey that just get you thinking.
Well, like Eddie said, I mean, the whole reason for the LIMA project is to find out if there's extraterrestrial life. Right. And whether or not Clifford, Tommy Lee Jones's character, finds proof of extraterrestrial life, we're going to kind of leave that alone. You'll have to go see the movie to figure out whether that's successful or not. But just the whole question in and of itself, it's like dealing with the fact of, are we alone in this massive universe, or are there others out there? Will we ever make contact?
Existential crisis,
yes. Says Eddie. Yeah, and I would definitely recommend it as well. I would not be surprised if we see Brad Pitt get an Oscar nomination. If not for this, he was great in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, so he'll get a nomination for one or the other.
Yeah, one or the other, he's coming up this year.
Yeah, so I would not be surprised if he gets some accolades at the end of this movie season. All right, we're going to wrap this up, our special Ad Astra edition. First of all, Oliver, I want to say thank you very much for joining us. It was really great.
Thank you very much for joining us. It was really great.
I was saying that to you, but I appreciate it. I'm well. Thank you. And Eddie, thanks again for taking time away.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And Bill, as usual, it's always
Oliver,
a pleasure.
What?
Should have said that.
We're going to fight soon.
Yeah, I'm as soon the as rumble. I hit stop here.
Thunderdome is setting up. Next week on Ask a Rocket Scientist, who won the cosmic battle?
Yes, the interstellar rumble is going to happen moments from now. But thanks again, Bill, for chiming in and talking us through this, because it was a really great experience. It was great seeing the movie with you and the boys. It was really fun. So definitely recommending Ad Astra. Thank you for listening to this special edition of Ask a Rocket Scientist. You can find more info about the movie and things like that at our website, iHeartRocketScience.com. Also, we have got a Facebook page. You can search for Ask a Rocket Scientist on Facebook. Like us there. We'll having discussions there as well. So once again, thank you very much for tuning in. We do appreciate it. And we'll be back again soon.
Bye-bye.
Ask a Rocket Scientist could be brought to you by you. Get your product or service the attention it deserves on a high-quality professional podcast. For more info, go to iHeartRocketScience.com.
Oh, and Bill, it just occurred to me, we didn't even get into the matter-antimatter discussion, so...
Does it matter?
See? This is why I hang out with Bill. Smartass. So, so I think that in the next episode, we need to get into what exactly is antimatter, because I don't understand it, and it fuels this, you know, it's like the MacGuffin in this movie.
Yeah.
Apparently,
it's, and many others for that matter.
Apparently, it's going to be responsible for the termination of all life in the universe somehow. I don't know what that is. So next podcast, we'll get into matter, antimatter. Does that work?
Absolutely. That works.
Bye-bye.